Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Storytime Stories when we come back. Hey, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then you pay an additional 17% income tax on that same $50,000. Now that's another $8,500. Now you've just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. Now isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Hey, we're talking about this letter from hell. The letter from hell is when you get a subpoena from the IRS and it says bring in all of your, it's called a respondents. Request for production of documents. Bring in all your records and books. Well, last time I'd covered about 11. We're up to letter K, asking for things like, but not limited to, bank statements and checkbooks and canceled checks and check stubs and checkbook registers and deposit receipts and savings account passbooks and bills or invoices for purchases of supplies and equipment and advertising and utilities and rent and repairs and taxes and insurance and all records and invoices pertaining to the cost of goods sold and inventories, if any. So I wrote up a list, and I put little Georgie on one side, and I put taxpayer on the other side, and I was able to go through 1A through 1K and write none. I don't have any of these documents. If I received this letter from hell, I would write a letter back and say, thank you for your letter, and I'm in compliance with your subpoena. I'm forwarding nothing to you because I don't have any of these records, documents, books, or papers. Now, if you're a normal, everyday garden variety taxpayer, you would have all of the above, or you would have a liability to produce any and all of the above if you had them. Now, it's true, you probably wouldn't have all of these documents, all of these items that's on this, what we call a boilerplate subpoena. Boilerplate. They have left absolutely nothing out. There isn't a postage stamp that wouldn't be covered here. I mean, these guys, they have covered everything. Now, knowing that in advance, if you knew what it was that the government would be subpoenaing, would be asking for. And then, if you made it a point not to have any of the above, let me give you an illustration. One of the things they're asking for here is any records you have of safe deposit boxes. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, you could live your life without a safe deposit box. Now, whatever it is that people put in their safe deposit boxes, instead of giving that to the bank, you know, the bank has a key, your safe deposit box, and I ask you, honest to God, do you believe you've got the only key to the safe deposit box? Then I said, honest to God, do you believe that the guy that has the other key hasn't opened your box and inventoried everything that's in it? Now, that being the case, assuming now that we could regain our capacity and we could take care of our own stuff without entrusting it to some third party to take care of. Then when you get this letter from hell and it says, hey, we'd like to know where your safe deposit box is. And in your answer, you say, I don't have a safe deposit box. Let's suppose that the stuff that you normal people would carry in a safe deposit box, you were able to bury it in a hole in the ground, or you were able to store it someplace that nobody knew anything about. Well, then couldn't you then have privacy and be in compliance with the law at the same time? There's no law that requires that you as a professional or a businessman that you have a safe deposit box. I know it's handy. I know it's safe and secure. And I know that it makes your mind rest at ease. But also, it has no privacy. It has the illusion of privacy because you have a key to it. It's true that you can keep me out of it. But the fact that you can keep me out of it and keep secret everything that's in your box and little Georgie Gordon doesn't know, hell, little Georgie Gordon's not a threat to you. The people who are a threat to you are government, and government has full access to it. So when you have a safe deposit box, always remember that the bank is chartered by the government. The bank is a government institution. The bank and the IRS work hand in glove. They're buddies. Anything the IRS asks for, the bank will give them. Now, most people would say, well, if you don't have anything to hide, well, that's right, then you don't need any privacy. I've often said that. If you don't have anything to hide, then you don't need any privacy. Most people don't have any privacy, and they're not really concerned about it. One guy asked me one time, he said, what is it that you're trying to hide? And I said, sir, if I told you what it is that I'm hiding, then it wouldn't be hidden any longer, would it? So whatever it is that I'm hiding, I don't want you to know about. That's why I'm hiding it, because I don't want you to know. Why? Because I want to be private. And privacy is a rare commodity. Not very many people have it. There's a few out there, but not very many. Now, last time we left off here with K, which brought us up to number two. Now, there's a whole nother bunch of stuff that the IRS wants from you. Remember, when we went in here, we petitioned the tax court. That made us the plaintiff. And the government now is defending against you. You're the offensive action. And the government's just defending themselves, just warding off your attack in the tax court. And under the tax court rules, which, by the way, that's their tax court, and that, by the way, is their rules, and they get to make up the rules, and the judge that's in the tax court's being paid by the IRS. So you're petitioning the IRS tax court to give you a fair trial under their rules. And the witnesses that are coming in to testify against you are all IRS agents, and they're all being paid for by your opponent. The judge is being paid for by your opponent. The rules are being made up by your opponent. And this is where you're going to get a fair trial. Got that, Bob? Now remember, you're a professional, and you went to college, and you're real smart, and you got a piece of paper that tells everybody how smart you are. So you're going to petition the tax court, play by their rules, and you're going to be judged by their judge, prosecuted and witnessed and testified against by their agents. And you think this is a fair trial. Just goes to show you that there's some people that can think, and then there's some people that think they can think. Number two. Now they want any and all licenses, diplomas, certificates, and or other indicia of qualification to render professional services as a chiropractor. So they want to see your license, diploma, certificate, and anything else that would tend to indicate that you're a member, that you're a party who thinks that he can think. Now they want to know a complete list of any and all persons to whom you rendered chiropractic services. So after I get through with K, I'm going to write down number 2, 3, 4, goes up to 10 here, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now remember, we're trying to figure out how many of us have these records and books to turn over. And let's see, is there anybody out there that could turn in a 100% record? Now, so far, my record's 100%. So with number 2, I'm going to write none, because I don't have any diplomas, certificates, etc. And then, for all of you professionals out there, I'm going to put down all. And that's over here under the taxpayer heading. Remember, we got little Georgie over here, and we got taxpayer. I'm in the left-hand column, and you're over here in the right-hand column. And so far, all of these records and books you have to turn over if you've got them. And all these records and books little Georgie has, he doesn't have to turn over. Number one, I'm not a licensed professional. Don't have an agreement. Don't deal in unjust weights and balances. Don't have any bank accounts and credit cards. And I don't have any of these records. Here's number 3. Listen to this. They want a complete list of any and all persons to whom you rendered chiropractic services. Well, it could be that you're a medical doctor or a dentist or that you're an engineer. Well, whatever your professional license, when they come after you, they'll say, we want a complete list of any and all persons to whom you rendered services. Fortunately for me, I can write none. And then for you, I'm going to put down all. And if you don't, if you withhold this information, now remember you're dealing with contempt here. Watch out for that. Number 4, they want a complete list of any and all persons who rendered services to you or who were employed by you in any capacity. They want their respective addresses, the services rendered, and the time period during which those services were rendered. Now remember, we're talking about a period of 5 years. This is from, I believe it was 84 to 88. So we want 84, 85, 86, 87, and 88 inclusive. 5 years. Then you've got to come up with a complete list of any and all persons that rendered any services to you during this 5-year period or to whom you rendered services. So that means every single person that you have rendered chiropractic service to over a 5-year period, you got to supply their name and address. Now talk about an onerous burden. Well, that would mean that you'd have to go through your file cabinet and pull out all those records and write down all of those, or produce your computer software, or copy it off of your hard drive, put it onto a CD, and send it in, wouldn't you? Now, this is pretty important, too, because a lot of times people believe that their records with their doctors have some kind of a patient-doctor privilege. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on here. Wake up and smell the coffee. When you go to a doctor, a dentist, a chiropractor, any professional, and he keeps a record on you, that's a public record. There is absolutely nothing in there that's secret. It is true that George Gordon can't get it, but every government agency can get it. Listen, the Department of Health and Human Services can get it, and then they'll turn around and share it with any and every other government agency that wants it, state, local, or federal. Now, furthermore, just for your information, there's a service out there for $1,600 that you can subscribe to, and here's what you need. You need a person's name, birth date, and social security number, and you can get any and all information that is in any computer anywhere that's online. How do you like that? Now, that includes all of your medical records and dental records and tax records and business records. I mean, that's all I need. Credit history, credit records, bank records. Now, if you think that the national, what do I call that, the NIB or NAB, It's the National Intelligence Agency, or National Security Agency, NSA, National Security Agency. These are the guys that listen in to communications all over the world. Honest to God, do you believe that your chiropractor can keep secret from the National Security Agency anything that they put in their computer? Boys and girls, those boys can listen to every telephone call that's being made on planet Earth simultaneously. And do you, honest to God, believe that anything that your chiropractor, your doctor, your employer puts into his computer is safe from the prying eyes of the NSA? Do you believe that? I mean, you sound like virgins in Hollywood to me. When I hear people talk about security and safety in computers, there isn't any safety or security in a computer. When you put your information into a computer, it's up for grabs. Period. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, there's privacy out here. There are some people that still practice the Fourth and Fifth Amendments to the federal Constitution. They're rare. There are not very many of them. They're very rare. So the first thing we need to do is to identify, well, where are these records being kept, and are these records secure? And here is a subpoena from the IRS that says, hey, Tommy, bring them in. And if you don't, we're going to throw your hiney in jail. Now, if the IRS can claim them, now you're sitting there saying to me that they don't exist or that they're secret and nobody else knows about them? Now, if you've got a computer that isn't online and it's, you know, sitting over here someplace, nobody knows anything about it, and that might be another story, but any computer that's online is open to examination. And not just from hackers. And we're going to remember that the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, do you honest to God believe that there are no hackers working for these government agencies? That hackers are just illegal guys that go to college and frat parties? Nerds that are running around here breaking the law? And honest to God, you believe that the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA are not prying into your computer and your computer data bank to find out what you know or what you don't know? All right, so now let's take a look at number four. Now they want a complete list of any and all persons who rendered services to you or were employed by you in any capacity. They want their respective addresses, the services rendered, and the time period during which those services were rendered. So if this guy, Lysiak, went to a doctor, they want those records. If you've got a list of employees, anybody that was employed by you in any capacity. So if you're an employee and your employer is subpoenaed in, all that information about you that he has in his computer is going to the IRS. Now let me share a little story here with you. Now, one time I was doing business with a company called Thriftway Lumber Company. And one day I got this audit. I got this audit came in. I think it was from the IRS, as I recall. State Tax Commission is what it was. It wasn't the IRS. It was the Idaho State Tax Commission. And they wanted these records and books and one thing and another. And then while I was going through that audit, then the State Contractors Licensing Board called me and asked me how come I didn't have a state contractor's license. And then the sales tax people called me one day and they said, hey, how come you don't have a sales tax resale number? And then after a while, the IRS called me and they said, hey, you got this audit going on. Now, we want to conduct an audit. Now, at that time, I was one of those virgins from Hollywood, and I started asking questions like, what in the hell is this all about? What has triggered all of this activity concerning me? So I was talking to an old-timey guy, you know, and at this time I was in my 30s, I think, and just a, you know, a punk-ass kid, you know, wet behind the ears. And I'm talking to this old guy, and he said, well, here's what happens, son. You buy your materials from this building material store, and you have a contractor's account there. and they give you a 20% discount. And they sucked you in with this discount policy. Now, the state or the feds, they come in and they audit Thriftway Lumber Company. They just come in and audit Home Depot. They just come in and audit Lowe's twice a year. What are they looking for? They're not looking for any tax evasion on the part of Lowe's or Home Depot. They're looking for tax evasion and improprieties on the part of those companies' customers. What they had done is they came into Thriftway and they said, well, we want to look at your records, and they saw George Gordon, and George Gordon bought $32,000 worth of building materials. Obviously something more than a home bathroom renovation, right? So now they go out and they say, well, has he got a contractor's license? Nope, he doesn't have a contractor's license. Oh, and then he must be contracting without a license. Is he dealing in the banks? And so they go looking around for bank accounts, and they find out that I write a check and pay my Thriftway account. Now they've got my bank number, don't they? Account number. Now they go to the Bank of Idaho and they say, hey, we'd like to look into this guy's bank account. Now they take a look at every check that I've ever written at the Bank of Idaho. See exactly where I'm spending them, what kind of supplies I'm buying, and who the suppliers are. They can build a hell of a case in short order, can't they? So it didn't take these guys very long, you know, to start auditing me. It won't take them very long to start auditing you. That's the purpose behind this whole system that we're all involved in. That's why they send us to school and teach us how to read and write and sign our name and make contracts. So we can go down and get a license. So that we can get a bank account. And so that we can make all these paper trails out here so that they can tax us. That's the purpose and the plan behind it. All right, so number four over here, I'm going to write down none. And I used to do this, but I quit doing that. And then for all the rest of you taxpayers, I'll write down all again. See? Number five, copies of all statements of account for all brokerage and or investment organizations maintained by you or for your benefit. Brokerage organizations, things where you buy stocks and bonds and maybe where you're buying gold and silver or, see? So I'm going to write down none because I don't deal with any brokerage houses. And for the rest of you people out there, yep, I'm going to write down all again. Taxpayers have a brokerage. Now, not everybody buys stocks. Not everybody buys bonds. Not everybody buys gold and silver. Not everybody's buying through a brokerage house. But, you know, a lot of you people are. And every time you make one of those transactions, that company is keeping a record of it and putting it in their computer. And pretty soon, by use of your name, your social security number, and your birth date, they put that along with all of these records and books. And then all a guy has to do at NSA or CIA or FBI is punch in your name, social security number, and birth date, and Viola. And everything you've ever done in your life is right there. Want to know what your school records are like? Some years back, I had occasion to look into that. Now, I'm 70 now, and I was in high school in 1957, and I wrote to the Ferndale High School, and I said, hey, let me see my transcript of record, and they sent it to me. I sent them a little money, and they sent it to me. So they still keep that, and they've got my name, social security number, and my birthday. Now, you think that the NSA doesn't have access to your first grade teacher's records, your fourth grade teacher's records? I mean, every paper, every grade, every report card that you got from the first grade until last night at 5 o'clock is at the fingertips of your government. Hell, you don't even know the answers to those questions. But you can rest assured that there's a government bureaucrat someplace that does. How do you like that? Talk about safety and security now, huh? Number six, they wanted to know the documentation evidencing any and all investments made by you or for your benefit, including but not limited to stock and bond certificates, certificates of deposit, and documents evidencing options purchased. So if you've got any stock options, certificates of deposit, bond or stock certificates, they want you to deliver them. And get this, let's suppose you don't deliver them. This is what they're after. They send you a subpoena, and they say, well, send this in, and you don't send it in. Because, see, you don't want them to know about those stocks and bonds. Honest to God, do you think for a minute that the IRS does not already know the answer to most of these questions? Now, boys and girls, you have been bantying about your name, social security number, and your birthday from day one. Anybody that asks you for those three identifying indicia, you give it to them. And that's the three identifying indicia that I have to find out any and everything about you. Now, your school records are sitting out there. And I just need your social security number and your name and birth date to corroborate and to get those school records. I don't care what it is. I can get your chiropractic records, your doctor's records, your attorney's records. And if he's got it on his computer hard drive, and if his computer is plugged in online, I can get them. And so can the NSA. So can every insurance company in America, every bank, the IRS, the State Tax Commission, the INS. They've all got access to it. Number seven, any and all documents evidencing billing or payment for chiropractic services from Medicaid, Medicare, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and any other insurance company or fund. Number six and seven, I'm going to write none on my list, and none and none, and I'm going to put all and all for you. Now, again, you may not be billing Medicare or Medicaid. But if you are, you can rest assured that those records are sitting there. And now the IRS is scrutinizing you, see? And they're saying to you, bring in your Medicare and Medicaid records. And maybe you've been cheating Medicare and Medicaid, and so you don't send them in. Now they got you. They subpoenaed them, and you didn't send them. Now they'll bring you into a deposition and put you under oath, and then they'll ask you about those documents, and you'll say, oh, I don't do business with Medicare. Now they got you for perjury. They already know. Now, always remember this. Here's a rule of thumb, that we never ask a question that we don't know the answer to. So you can just about bet when the U.S. attorney asks you a question, he already knows the answer, and he's got it right in front of him, baiting you in to see if you'll lie about it. Baiting you in to see if you produced it on discovery. How do you like that? Does it sound hopeless yet? Well, stick around, because there's more to come. Number eight. All forms W-2 received and or issued by you, your agent, and or by your partnership or corporation of which you are or were a partner or officer. So, if you were an officer or a partner over the past 5 years, remember, we're limiting this now to 84 to 88, 5 years inclusive. You don't have to give them 80, 81, and 82, and 83, but you got to give them 84, 5, 6, 7, and 8. You don't have to give them 89, 90, and 91. But for these 5 years that they're subpoenaing in, you got to give it all, if you've got it, if you're a taxpayer. Now, most people out there are, in fact, taxpayers, citizens, taxpayers, and I don't deny it, but not everybody is, and once in a while, you'll find somebody that wants to withdraw from the organization, not often, but once in a while. So for number eight, I don't have any form W-2s received. I never issued anybody any W-2s. I don't have any agents, partnerships, or corporations. I haven't been a partner or an officer, so I'm going to write none down, N-O-N-E. And for you, I'm going to put down all. Now, let's try number nine. All documentation evidencing dividends and or interest received by you, your agent, and or by a partnership or corporation of which you are or were a partner or officer. I'm going to write none for me and all for you. Number 10, any and all loan application forms, loan agreements, promissory notes, mortgage documents, security agreements, financing statements, and or amortization schedules entered into or in effect during the applicable years, and documents evidencing repayment of any and all of the above stated loans and or borrowings. So any money that you borrowed from the bank, any credit card debt, any financing that you've had or leases that you might have entered into, all of that information now has to be provided. Now remember, not only do you have to provide it, you have to get in your car and deliver it to the office in Chicago. That's what happened to this guy Lysak. He had to get in his car in Indiana and drive to Chicago, find a place to park, and bring in these boxes of stuff and deliver them to the IRS so that they could copy them. Now, the IRS is going to use this as the beginning point of a criminal investigation against you. And all of this information is being kept by you. And supposedly, as an obligation of law. Now, some of this you do have to keep. Most of it you don't. Most of the items on our list here you don't need, shouldn't have, can't use, and ought to do without. But you have them all just in case you want to come in and prove that you don't owe as much as the IRS is claiming. Number 10, then. These applications for loans and loan agreements and all the rest, I'm going to write a none down here, N-O-N-E. And then I'm going to write an all over here on your side. Now, so far, I'm batting 100%. I've been at this for 25 years. I just wanted to point this out. It's a story that's worth repeating. A story worth repeating because most people don't know how to be private. So I just thought, well, let's put this story out and let's see how many of you would like to learn how to become private. Hey, we're about the halfway point here, so let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing a letter from hell. The letter from hell is called a subpoena. Subpoena? This is a subpoena here addressed to Gerald N. Lysiak, docket number 7128-91. This is back in 1991. This is public information, just in case you are wondering. Anybody in the world can get it, sitting right there in the U.S. tax court. And number 11, they want any and all billing statements, invoices, contracts, agreements, and other documents evidencing your earnings and services provided by you in your chiropractic business and in all other income-producing activities. Now, income-producing activities, that's an important statement. What if you didn't have any income-producing activities? Now, if you've been to public school, you probably don't know of any other way to make a living other than income-producing activities. If you're a professional, you haven't got a clue as to how you would make money, earn a living, or run your business without income-producing activities. But boys and girls, there was life before income. And I contend that there will be life after income. It's kind of like there was life before toilet paper. And I predict that there will be life after toilet paper. I understand how valuable and how important toilet paper is. Boys and girls, there was life before electricity. I predict that there will be life after electricity. And I understand full well the importance of electricity in modern America and the modern world, and how valuable it is, and how much I enjoy it. But I want to point out that there was life on this planet before income, toilet paper, and electricity. There will be life on this planet after income, electricity, and toilet paper. And that while those three activities are important, they are not necessary. Number 11, I'm going to put down none for little Georgie. I don't have any of those. And I'm going to put down all here for you people. And then number 12, they're looking for copies of any personal or accountant's work papers which summarize your financial operations. Got any scraps of paper laying around in which your accountant might have some work papers? We want those too. Well, my accountant doesn't have any of those, so I'm going to put down none, and I'm going to put down all. And then finally, the 13th item, copies of all individual federal and state income tax returns filed. Now, I want to point out that income tax and income tax returns is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. That's plank number two, a heavy progressive income tax. So, I used to have those. I used to be a practicing communist. I stopped doing that. It wasn't in my best interest, so I'm going to put down none for me, and I'm going to put down all for you. All right, now let me count these up here. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. So we have 23 categories of information. That's 23 categories of information. And these 23 categories contain probably 100 or maybe even 150. I'm just going to write down 100 to 150 specific articulable documents that you either have or might have or are presumed to have. Just to give you an illustration again, let me run over a couple of these. They want things like bank statements. That's one item. Checkbooks, two. Canceled checks, three. check stubs, 4. Checkbook registers, 5. Deposit receipts, 6. And savings account passbook, 7. So the very first item they're asking for has 7 specific documents or books that you might have that the government wants you to turn over, and there's 23 of these categories. Now, some of them only have one item, but some of them have 7 or 8. So without counting them up, I've never done that. There's a bunch of information here. I'm happy to report to you that out of these 23 categories of information that request 100 to 150 individual documents, I have succeeded in developing a lifestyle in which I don't have a single one of those 23 categories, nor do I have a single one of those specific documents. Not a one. And believe it or not, I'm in an office right now with electric lights. I am broadcasting and making CDs. I have indoor plumbing in my house, carpet on my floor. And I don't have a single one of those documents. So if I received this letter from hell, I would respond to it by writing back to the chief counsel of the IRS. In this case, I'd write a letter to Joseph T. Ferrick, attorney, tax court, number, and he's got his number here, 219 South Dearborn Street, Suite 1342, Chicago, Illinois, zip code 60604, and I would say, "Dear Joe, I received your subpoena. I'm here to inform you that I have none of the above documents. Thank you for writing. If I can be of further service, feel free to call." I'd sign it and put my name, address, and telephone number, and that's the way you deal with your letter from hell. Now, as a licensed professional, you can't do that. You either have these documents, or in some cases, you're required to keep them. For instance, patient records. I mean, you can't render professional services as a chiropractor without keeping a record on the person that you're performing the service on. So, you might be sitting there saying, "Well, how do you go get your chiropractic service?" Well, I have it done right here. I got a chiropractic table right here in my house. I have it done right here, professionally, right here on my own table. How do you like that? Maybe I have to go to a doctor. I'm not opposed to some records. You know, there's some things that have to be done. Some records have to be kept. But do you need to keep all of these records here? Especially records that could get kind of personal. You know, like how much money do you make every year? Well, did you want everybody out there to know that? Because if you're out here as a professional, you can just about bet that everybody knows how much money you're making. Somebody's going to write me a letter and say, "Well, shouldn't they pay their fair share of taxes?" You damn right they should. You betcha. They should pay all of their taxes. And the reason for that is that they're licensed professionals. They are given a monopoly. They're given that special status for the express purpose of raping, robbing, and pillaging the general public. They're licensed to do that. And it's the government that gives them that license to do that, and they need to pay their fair share to their partner. We see that in a case called Diefendorf versus Galay. In the final analysis, the income tax that's being cut off is simply the state's share of a regulated monopoly. The government comes out here by law and creates a monopoly. And then they allow you to go out and sell that monopoly to people, and then the government wants to protect you in that monopoly. So if I went out and opened up a store and I said, "George Gordon's Chiropractic Office," hell, they'd have me in jail by the end of the day. Because, see, all the other licensed chiropractors would say, "Hey, this guy over here is practicing medicine without a license. He's a scab in our private union shop." See, you chiropractors out there have a closed union shop. You medical doctors, you have a closed union shop. Anybody that's out there practicing medicine or competing with you is a scab. We're not going to tolerate that. I hear you loud and clear. Now, you need to understand now that you doctors out there are tax collecting agents. You have been taught and trained your profession for the express purpose of selling those useless services to people who really don't need them, can't use them, and shouldn't have them, but believe that they can't live without them, so that you can charge them exorbitant prices, and so that you can enjoy this monopoly and make this great income. And then, of course, you've got to pay over a share of that income to the government, so that the government can put the police out there on the street corners to protect your monopoly. Now, for the rest of us out here, do we really need doctors and dentists? Well, yeah. There are 19 health laws. Most people don't practice those 19 health laws, or if they practice any of them, some of them, they don't practice all of them. That's why you get sick. See, your body was designed to live for 70 years, 25,550 days, trouble-free. That is, no colds, no flu, no pneumonia, no heart attack, no stroke, no cancer, muscular dystrophy. 25,550 days. Now, your body's going to wear out. It is not designed to live forever. Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God. That's just the way life is. It's appointed to all flesh to die once. You're going to die once, at least. You could die two or three times, but at least once you're going to die. Now, if we could practice those 19 health laws starting out from birth until we're 70, we wouldn't get sick. Well, if we did that, of what value would that be to a medical doctor? Can you imagine a world in which there's no cancer, no heart attack, and no stroke, no pneumonia, no muscular dystrophy? What do we need insulin for if there's no diabetes? You see, medical doctors need diabetes so that they can sell insulin. How in the hell are you going to... When was the last time you bought insulin? Well, all you diabetics are saying, well, I bought it last week. Now, I don't have diabetes, and so I'm going to sit here and report, well, I have never bought any insulin. None. Zero. Zilch. Now, let's ask the question, well, how much money have the doctors made off of you selling you insulin? Well, go back in your records and see how much money the violation of the health laws that prevented diabetes has cost you because you just couldn't live without those Coca-Colas. Give you an illustration here. Over the past 20 years, the incidence of diabetes in the United States has doubled. In that same 20 years, the consumption of soda pop in this country has doubled. Nobody has ever connected those two dots. Or put another way, what if we cut the consumption of soda pop by 50% today over the next 20 years? What do you think the net result would be in the number of diabetes cases we'd have? Wouldn't that be kind of interesting to test? I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, that's not proof of anything. Diabetes isn't caused just by soda pop. Well, you're probably right. Are you there to tell me that soda pop cures diabetes and that if we drink twice as much soda pop that the diabetes will go away? I don't think anybody in his right mind would make a claim like that. Okay. Well, then diabetes isn't cured by soda pop. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe soda pop has something to do with the cause of it? Anybody ever looked into that? Anybody ever thought of that? I'm just using the statistics here to illustrate a point. That if the amount of soda pop is doubled, the consumption of it is doubled in the last 20 years, and diabetes is doubled in the last 20 years, could there be a connecting link? Now somebody's going to say, well, in the last 20 years, car registrations have doubled. At the same time diabetes has doubled, are you saying to me that car registration causes diabetes? There's always somebody that writes in some smart-ass question or some smart-ass remark like that. Never fails. I don't want to sit here and argue with you. I just want to throw out some ideas and say, hey, let me tell you a story. So when we get back to this thing of the boilerplate subpoena, Is there a cause and effect relationship that comes into this? And I contend that the answer is yes. Yes, there is. You see, if we just go back 100 years, it takes us back to about 1909. You see, this is before the Federal Reserve Act. This is in the days when we still had gold and silver coin. This is in the days before we had an income tax. There was life in 1909. There were people that were buying, selling, and trading and doing business in 1909. And they were living their lives, and they didn't have things like, but not limited to. Let me give you an illustration. The average Joe Sixpack did not have bank statements, checkbooks, canceled checks, check stubs, checkbook registers, deposit receipts, and savings account passbooks. And that doesn't mean that they weren't, that they were unheard of or that nobody had them. It was that the average Joe Sixpack didn't. How about wage statements and Form 1099s? Nobody had those in 1909. Employee earning statements. Probably you could get an employee earning statement from your boss. He probably could tell you that in the course of a year, we have paid you X number of dollars in gold coin. But you weren't paying any taxes on it, and there wasn't any need to keep it. And if your employer didn't keep it, he wasn't breaking any laws. And if you didn't know how much you earned last year, it didn't make any difference to anybody. Now, as we take a look at things, you know, like licenses, diplomas, certificates, and or other indici of qualification to render professional services, professionals did not need any proof that they were competent and qualified. Now, let's take a look at this competence and qualification because, you know, most people believe that a doctor has to have a license to be competent and qualified. But in 1909, they didn't. Now, today, these licensed, competent, qualified medical doctors make mistakes. And here in the United States, they make mistakes at the rate of 130,000 people die every year because of iatrogenic disease. That's called a doctor's error. The doctor comes in, operates on your right lung for lung cancer, and removes it. And then we find out that, oops, it was the left lung that had the tumor in it, not the right one. See? Mistakes like that kill 130,000 people a year. There's another category. It kills about 100,000 people a year, and it's called bad drug dosages. Now, that's where your doctor gives you the wrong drug, or he prescribed the wrong drug, or he prescribed it in the wrong amount, not enough or too much. Or he prescribed the right drug in the right amount, but he can't write. Nobody can read what he writes. And the pharmacy over here made a mistake and made the potency of it wrong. Or the nurse couldn't read his writing and administered it incorrectly. All right. Now, those are called drug-related deaths. Kills 100,000 a year. Then there's about 80,000 people a year that are killed in the hospitals because of staph infections and other diseases that they pick up in the hospital. So here you are, you go to the hospital, and let's say you needed cosmetic surgery because you were ugly. And so now trying to pretty you up a little bit, you pick up a staph infection and die. That kills about 80,000 people a year, maybe 80 or 90. Now add those up, 80, 100, and 130, and you get 300,000. So we're killing 300,000 people a year in this country by the licensed, paid professionals. Now let's compare that with drugs. 100,000 people are being killed every year in the United States by licensed, paid professionals. So how many people in the United States are being killed by the unlicensed Joe Sixpack illegal drug salesman down on the street corner? And the answer is $6,000 a year. So 106,000 people are dying every year from drugs or drug-related incidents. 100,000 are being killed by the doctor. 6,000 are being killed by the illegal drug dealer. Who's the biggest threat to you and me out here selling drugs? I just want to point that out to you. Now, there was a time when we didn't have these licensed paid professionals, and it's my contention that being a licensed paid professional does not protect a single member of the public from the deprivations that come from these licensed professionals. It is nice to know that you went to college, doc. It's nice to know that you're real smart and you got a lot of degrees and papers that you're hanging up on the wall. That's comforting. But it sure as hell doesn't prove that you're competent, because there's evidently a bunch of incompetents out there that are licensed, bonded, and insured that are killing people every day. And my problem is I can't tell one from the other. Out in the free marketplace, when a doctor kills somebody, the marketplace takes notes of it and says, hey, listen, this doc over here killed five people with this treatment. You want to go to old Doc so-and-so? For instance, I knew a guy who was a midwife. It was a man. He wasn't a doctor now, just a man. He was called a midwife. They call them midwives, and they deliver babies. Over a period of 30 years, this guy had delivered more than 10,000 babies. 10,000 babies. And I believe it was less than 10, and I think the number was 6 babies died during delivery. 6. And this guy was prosecuted all 6 times. Pinned to government's on his ass. Pediatricians here in the United States, if I understand the numbers correctly here, if I'm just off the top of my head, correct me now if I'm wrong, but I think the average pediatrician in America loses 16 babies per year during childbirth. Check that number for me and see if that's right. The average pediatrician in America is losing 16 babies per year. This guy lost 6 in 30 years. I ask you, who's the better guy, the unlicensed midwife or your licensed pediatrician? I just throw that out for your consideration. In any event, it's a hell of a lot more than this midwife. And midwives are just hated by the medical profession, coast to coast and border to border. All right, so that's the story here on Storytime. Now, the last item here to bring to your attention is that if you would like to divorce yourself from this system, if little Georgie Gordon can do it, then so can you. And here at the law school, we've been teaching people for 25 years how to break these connecting links so that you can comply with all the laws of the United States and all the laws of Missouri and all the laws of God and do all three of these all at the same time. That's what we do here at the law school. That's why this is called a law school. We teach law here. Now, you don't have to carry all of these records and books unless you've agreed to and signed up and became a licensed professional. Have you ever thought about maybe resigning your commission and becoming a private freeman? Freeman. It's a wild new concept, wild new idea. All right, I'm about out of time, so let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.